walking down the right path when your enemies do everything they can to stop you. If your enemies are ever indifferent, it is a clear sign that we have deviated from the right path. So their increased animosity is actually a good sign.
That is why the presence of masses at the mausoleum this year is more significant than previous years, considering a period of foreign-backed riots in the country and Western countries increasing political pressure on Iran to unprecedented levels.
We are here to say that we are proud of our revolution and our country.
When Imam Khomeini needed our support to topple the Pahlavi regime, my sons did not hesitate.
I am here to say that I will always support the leader and the Islamic revolution.
My son gave his life for this revolution, and I am here to uphold his values.
Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution at a time when they've managed to thwart foreign-backed riots in the country and bring peace and calm back to all the cities across Iran. More than anything, the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution is a show of solidarity. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The decision to send German and American tanks to Ukraine is continuing to generate controversy. Many believe the move will prolong the war, and there's concern as to how Russia might respond. However, at a parliamentary hearing on Tuesday, EU legislators were told the West should go even further.
Russia is attacking Ukraine from Russian territory, so obviously we should provide the Ukrainians with long-range missiles, obviously.
There are a lot of EU lawmakers who agree.
Any delay to supply Ukraine with needed weaponry and ammunition is more lives lost on the battlefield.
Some argue constantly supplying lethal weapons to Ukraine is foolish.
We're prepared to risk nuclear war in order to continue this US-NATO proxy war. It is total madness. And this European Union and the European Parliament have lost the plot. They've lost the run of themselves.
European Union taxpayers have provided 50 billion euro to Kiev since last March.
What happens to all the money we send to Ukraine? Is it just disappearing into individuals' pockets? Even President Zelensky has had to admit there's a big problem with widespread corruption.
A number of legislators would like to see less division within the EU.
Austria and Hungary just decided we will not deliver weapons. Okay, it's their decision. But that shows already some hesitation or some breakup of unity.
Spanish MEP Javier Nart told his colleagues it's, quote, ridiculous to suggest Ukraine can win the war against Russia. For now, the US and Germany have ruled out providing fighter jets to Ukraine. Others, including France, have not. According to many analysts, the risk that the conflict could escalate further and spiral completely out of control has never been greater. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin visited South Korea this week to reassure officials here that Washington will remain committed to the U.S.-South Korea alliance.
The U.S. commitment to the defense of Korea is ironclad. You heard us say that a number of times, but that's just not a slogan. It is what we're all about. That commitment is ironclad. And our extended deterrence is at the heart of that commitment.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol restarted large-scale joint military exercises with the U.S. last year, although the U.S. reportedly deployed its so-called strategic assets, weapons capable of delivering nuclear bombs. The South Korean leader wants more American firepower at his disposal. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has repeatedly suggested the need for the U.S. to make a stronger demonstration of extended deterrence, its nuclear umbrella. And the South Korean public has grown skeptical of the U.S. alliance, with a majority now advocating that South Korea develop its own nuclear weapons. The U.S. has also pressured South Korea for greater cooperation with Japan in participation in joint drills. Peace advocates find such a trilateral alliance worrisome.
If the South Korea-U.S. and South Korea-U.S.-Japan alliances are established through cooperative military exercises, the South Korean military will now defend Japan and the U.S. mainland in the Pacific, not South Korea. South Korea will then be reduced to an outpost to protect the United States and Japan.
Meanwhile, earlier this week, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg visited South Korea to encourage Seoul to send weapons directly to Ukraine. South Korea is exporting weapons to countries that are sending their own military supplies to Ukraine, but has so far refused to provide Kiev with direct military aid. Frank Smith, Seoul.
In a new decree by the Ministry of Higher Education, the Taliban government ordered universities and private institutions in Afghanistan not to enroll women in the entrance exam of 2023. While this decree strengthens a December decree that totally banned women from education, women feel frustrated about their future educations.
When I first heard that we can't enroll for the entrance exam and saw the decree, I felt frustrated. I had high hopes for my future. I feel terrible about that.
I felt like my life had come to an end when I heard this. To be alive is not just to breathe. One must reach their dreams. I felt deeply sorry and not alive.
While the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, with 57 members of Muslim countries, has called the new decree disappointing, Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, in a press conference expressed his country's readiness to provide any kind of support to Afghanistan in order to restore women's education in the country. Iranian universities had already announced their readiness to hold online classes for the women of Afghanistan. The women in Afghanistan say such a cooperation could be useful.
Once again, we stress that banning girls and women of Afghanistan from education is an improper act and against Islamic teachings. Iran is ready to offer any kind of support needed to upgrade education and reopen schools for the women of Afghanistan in coordination with the interim Afghan government.
Meantime, Afghan women say international community has turned a blind eye to their problems.
Unfortunately, whatever happens in Afghanistan, the international community just condemns it. Online education, on the other hand, is definitely positive, but not as much as face-to-face classes. We women ask the international community to negotiate with the Taliban on reopening the schools.
Education ban in Afghanistan started 500 days ago on girls in 7th to 12th grade, then a ban on universities 2 months ago, and following that, women were banned from working for foreign NGOs and organizations that caused many of these NGOs to stop their mission in Afghanistan. Now, a ban on entrance exam and the question, is there going to be more such restrictions?
In both decrees on women's education ban, a line draws attention saying, until further notice. But nobody really knows if and when this ban will end. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terence fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willest, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has visited Venezuela. Both he and the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro pledged closer ties, especially in the face of U.S. pressure. This is while the Iranian Foreign Minister also visited Nicaragua and pledged the same with its president. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at how Iran continues to establish relationships with countries not only in South America but beyond to forge ties free from U.S. influence, especially when it comes to U.S.'s far-reaching illegal sanctions. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. America joins us from the capital, Tehran. Also joining us is Arnold August, author and journalist, who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both, Hamid Shahrabi. I'll first start with you, taking a look at the meeting that's taken place between the Iranian foreign minister and, of course, Venezuela. Both are stated goal of the meeting was to enhance their cooperation, but more importantly, in the bigger picture, to thwart cruel sanctions, especially the ones from the U.S. Is that what we're looking at in terms of the significance of this meeting, the bigger picture? Is how they can cooperate together in order to not have U.S. sanctions affect their trade relationship at a minimum?
Yes, it is what you just mentioned. It is that, of course, it is that, but plus other things. Without exaggerating, I think this type of visits at this time, at this epoch, the time that we live, indicates further fundamental developments in the fourth political relationship among nations. I mean, more explicitly, imperialist countries versus independent nations. In that sense, we are witnessing signals of disintegration of the monopolar system and coming to birth and expansion of multipolar systems. And in this picture, countries that were once as totally subordinated, totally colonized, and exploited by the imperialist camp are playing a role, are establishing relationships based on their national sovereignty, their will to develop their country based on their natural resources, based on their independent thinking and planning. This is what is happening, which is great, which is very important, especially as you just mentioned, from the point of view of sanctions. Both countries, Iran and Venezuela, are under sanctions, and they both have immense, without exaggeration, immense capacities in order to be exploited in the road of cooperation between the two countries.
Sure.
Unlimited capacity. I don't want to go further.
We won't get further. We obviously just started this conversation. Arnold August, you had the Venezuelan president visit Iran recently, of which there was a 20-year agreement that was signed between the two. These are long-term agreements that Iran has had with a number of countries at this point, such as Russia and China. But why Venezuela, do you think? I mean, what do you see this relationship in terms of not just a trade partner, but one that Iran saw, and then Venezuela, obviously, or maybe mutually, came up with the fact that there needs to be a solidification happening in the form of a 20-year agreement?
Yes, as you say, a solidification is necessary. And I was very heartened to see, watch on television, the a visit of the foreign minister of Iran, Amir Abdullahian, in Caracas. It seemed only yesterday, I believe, but it was a long time ago, when we together covered President Maduro's historic visit to Tehran, which resulted in a multi-year, multifaceted cooperation agreement. But what is happening now, the two countries and the leaders of both countries, Iran and Venezuela, do not seem to be leaving anything to chance. The foreign minister went all the way to Caracas, obviously to, as they say in their communique, to make that historic agreement even more concrete and also to expand it in the situation that it, since the visit of President Maduro to Tehran, the sanctions against Iran have increased. So all the more reason now to step up and make that historic agreement even more concrete. And I also think what you said is right, more than just trade. I think that increasingly, and this perhaps is not recognized enough on the international sphere, is that in terms of politics, in terms of outlook, the Iranian government and the Maduro government are coming closer to closer and closer. For example, in the president of Iran's first speech to the United Nations General Assembly a short while ago, he said we should not choose between morality and capitalism. In other words, against capitalism and in favor of unipolarity. And I think President Maduro, if I just finish on that one point, I think it's very important. He made a very important speech, or it was rather an interview with Ignacio Aramonet on January 1st, 2023, in which he said, talking about the issue of Ukraine, he said, this is part of the labor pains of a world that will emerge. I think that's very, very significant, both Iran and President Iran and Venezuela are very strong political voices in the world today against U.S. hegemony.
Well, one of the things, as you said, in a changing world that we're seeing here, if I'm correct to interpret it that way, Hamid, is looking at the way that Iran delivered these fuel tankers to Venezuela and delivered oil or oil condensate. I'm not too sure what form it was in, but the mere fact that it was that it made this journey on a number of occasions to Venezuela, it was highly publicized. And of course, the U.S. was looking on because obviously both countries are under severe sanctions. Wasn't that a big deal in the sense that it sent out a message that here we are, we're breaking the U.S. sanctions and you, the U.S., can't do anything about it, delivering the product to Venezuela on a number of occasions. Do you think that that was an important thing that happened?
Yes.
No, this is for Hamid Shahrabi.
Oh, Hamid, sorry. Go ahead,
Hamid. No, it's okay.
Yes. A short comment on that is, you know, as the authorities of both countries and the solid statistics indicate, this deal between Iran and Venezuela in regard to oil, and further than that, in regard to renovating the oil refineries, has proved to increase the production capacity of Venezuela in regard to oil production, in regard to refinery of the oil. And this is not only important from the economic point of view, which in itself it is important from that point of view, but it goes further, as you just mentioned. The whole world witnessed with their own eyes that despite the will and the dictates of the United States, two independent nations are cooperating and are trading, ignoring the illegal and illegitimate sanctions and benefiting from the capacities of each country. That was great, and it happened, and they couldn't do anything about it. Look at it, in reality. They couldn't do anything about it, which demands further discussion, going to the point that why they couldn't. It is, let me put it this way. What other events are we shall we look for to see the disintegration of the hegemony of imperialism? This is what is happening.
Sure.
But allow me to say that when you mentioned the comprehensive agreement, joint agreement for cooperation in different areas, although this is very important to reach these agreements, it's more important to implement and expand such agreements and to consider factors blocking and intervening in okay. such a way to block such agreements. I'm talking about the United States forces and all the political forces allied to it.
Sure. Well, this is part of the changing landscape, but Iran has been on this for a while when it comes to Latin America. Arnold August, another important trip that the Iranian foreign minister did make was to Nicaragua. And the headlines read, Iran-Nicaragua vow to confront common enemy sanctions, of course, in reference to the U.S. sanctions, and how they will be able to manage to, conduct trade by going about a route where, again, the sanctions won't have an effect. The part of the changing landscape is what has been in motion for quite some time when it comes to Iran, and it wants to expand that to countries that have been a victim of U.S. sanctions. But in particular, we're seeing Iran being rather, not aggressive, but being very much into establishing this type of relationship with Latin American countries. Brazil is another one where Iran does have good relationships with Brazil, especially with the now president at the time before that, even during the Ahmadinejad, former president of Iran's tenure. We had good relationship with Brazil then. So are we seeing a new front with Latin American countries when it comes to their relationship with Iran?
Yes, we are definitely seeing a new front. But just to add on that one point, on the seven tankers that were heroically sent by Iran to Venezuela, that took place before the war in Ukraine. And now, since the war, the move towards multipolarity, opposition to U.S. hegemony is even stronger. I was very happy to see that in addition to Iran, the foreign minister of Iran went to Nicaragua because Daniel Ortega is one of the most outspoken, clear voice against U.S. hegemony and also, I shall say, against any unreasonable conciliation between Latin America and the United States. He insists Latin America has to be safe. It has to be safe. It has to be sovereign. And that you know, was an important stop in this current trip by the Iranian foreign minister. And yet Latin America is becoming extremely important. Of course, when we talk about international alliances, we mention anti-hegemic alliances. We mention Iran, Russia, China. But we also cannot omit to mention secondary countries, especially in Latin America. For example, Venezuela, with its strong voice against U.S. imperialism, is playing an important role, and even smaller, Nicaragua is playing that important role. And of course, Brazil, which is big, now is into the BRICS, which will soon include other countries such as Iran and Turkey, etc. All these new configurations on the world scale, many of them based in Latin America, is going to provide a further impulse towards multipolarity, and we should not underestimate the role of smaller countries such as Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba, etc., Bolivia, in pushing against the U.S. hegemony. People have lost their fear about being decoupled from the United States. On the contrary, you know, we talk about trends, we talk about fashion trends. Well, there's a trend in the world today to decouple sure. from the United States and Europe. This is very significant.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Sure. Well, it's interesting, Hamid Shahrabi, our guest there, when he talked about Russia, Iran, and Venezuela. I want to add those three countries and then put China in that mix and ask you about how the four altogether represents, when you take a look at their oil and gas reserves, about 40% of the world capacity. So that kind of forms a block because they are all on the same page when it comes to the way that they are standing up against the U.S. Shouldn't the U.S. be worried that when you have that amount of natural energy reserves in on one camp with these four countries, that it therefore would pose some kind of a challenge for the U.S. when it comes to its energy needs, along with people or countries that are aligned with the U.S., in particular European countries?
Well, this is the general picture, as you draw it, that is true. We are talking about the strong countries when it comes to different aspects, mainly here what you're talking about, the energy, the source of energy, the oil, the place of Venezuela in that regard, Russia in that regard, Iran in that regard. And what is interesting, again, as you mentioned, is not much that the United States can do about it. See, the history has not been always like this. They have dominated, they have ordered, they have dictated. And this is not possible any longer. The countries decide for themselves, and powerful countries. As you mentioned, I mean, this cooperation between Iran and the Latin American countries, I think when you bring to picture other possibilities, such as investment by China, mainly, to become part of this cooperation, to join this cooperation, creates miracles, creates conditions for development, real development of the countries which have been, for centuries, deprived of development based on their natural resources, based on their human power, based on the other wealth of their countries. This is happening right in front of our eyes. But what is important, I think, beside mentioning this reality, is to be at the same time critical on where we can be when it is compared to where we are. I'm talking about it like when you compare the amount of trade between Iran and Venezuela, Iran and Nicaragua, Iran and Cuba, although it is it's been improving, but is negligible. Mm-hmm. It is quite negligible. When you lose, and I really think it's a grand occasion for academic centers, for revolutionary forces to make serious studies on how to expand such win-win cooperations. Sure. We have been hearing about win-win. For decades, for centuries, we have had relationships with metropolitan cities and countries in the West that it has been all the way win from one side and lose from the other side, which sure. is us. We have lost all the time in that relationship. And now the situation has been changed. We can, this can happen, that when we look at the natural resources, instead of only looking at Iran, we bring into picture all these natural resources in Latin America and the planning and the capabilities of each country. Let's talk about Iran. We have great technology know-how in regard to which could be transferred to good sure. infrastructure in poor countries and or deprived countries of Latin America.
Okay, so Arnold August, you noticed the way that our guests there talked when it came to Iran and other countries. The issues or points that he made were in terms of advancement of trade, in terms of sharing technology, in terms of sharing the natural resources between Iran and, well, in this case, we talked about Latin American countries. But when it comes to the U.S., we're not hearing that type of talk, really. Are we? I mean, you know, it's the U.S. is always on this path where it wants countries to align with its foreign policy. And if it doesn't, it's a black and white issue. If you don't listen to us, sanctions. We're going to give you, you're going to go under sanctions, right? I mean, it just seems to be that way. And I think countries are tired of that. And I think countries are saying, if we want to deal with the U.S., it doesn't mean we have to listen to the U.S. We also want to advance with other countries, such as Iran, such as Russia, perhaps, such as China. Again, every country for itself. But that's where the shift is going. Taking a look at, for example, the Brazilian president, Lula da Inácio da Silva, in his first trip abroad, he went to Argentina. And one of the things he talked about was that common currency in a move away from the dollar. The U.S. is watching all this happening. What can the U.S. do?
Just to add what Hamid said about the cooperation between Iran and Venezuela, there's an aspect that is very important in that long-term agreement that was signed a few months ago, in addition to technology, economics, to also expand direct links between the people of Iran and the people of Venezuela, with a direct flight, I believe, I think it's once a week, from Tehran to Caracas. This will help a lot for people in Iran to visit and get to know Venezuela and vice versa. This will help to solidify the relationship almost as much as the economic common interest. Now, you also asked the following question. Should the U.S. Be afraid about what is happening now in terms of certain countries and regions opposing U.S. hegemony? Yes, of course, they are afraid. And I believe one of the reasons, one of the manifestations of their fear of this a growing multilateral world was to use NATO and Ukraine to attack Russia. For what purpose? To destabilize and weaken Russia, as well as destabilize and weaken the growing Russian-Chinese alliance. Now, of course, the United States had that to fear, and that's how they went into action in Ukraine. But I think we, the peoples of the world, we also have something to fear. Because even though the United States is definitely losing its grip on the world, no one can have any illusion that the U.S. imperialism that has been so used to being the top dog in the world for so many decades, they are not going to take this lying down. We can expect important other war provocations, which has to be opposed by the peoples of the world, progressive governments.
Okay. All right. Taking a look at the last question, since we're almost out of time over here, Hamid Shabrabi. You know, we're not just noticing a shift when it comes to Latin American countries vis-a-vis the U.S., and then, of course, Iran being one of the countries establishing relations with these Latin American countries. We're looking at the U.S. also falling behind in Africa. I'm kind of switching the focus here when it comes to countries like Russia and China and their foothold in that continent. African countries also are not so keen to further develop and enhance their ties with the U.S. because they are also seeing this shift. And, of course, both Russia and China, especially China, has expanded itself through many trade sectors with different countries in Africa. And Iran is very keen to establish itself with African countries also. So my final question to you is, we are seeing this shift that's happening around the globe somewhat when it comes to the U.S. being left out, aren't we? In less than a minute, please.
Would you please repeat the last part of your
sentence? We're seeing the U.S. somewhat left out in the dark. We're not seeing the U.S. being part of any new trade blocs. As a matter of fact, new trade blocs are being formed. Iran is accessing to, like, the SCO or the Eurasian Economic Union also. And these are all void of the U.S. So isn't the U.S. left out in a sense?
Yes, it is. It is being left out. It is being left out. And as Arnold mentioned correctly, and this is very important, that doesn't mean that they're going to sit down and just look at the developing events, which is not in their favor. They do anything to block this, to disrupt it, to make coups, wars, or whatever they can. But even in that regard, their hands is not that much open, because we have the masses of the people more aware, more being at the scene, in the streets,
okay.
More involved in their national politics. And this is not, but again, as you mentioned correctly, it's not limited to Latin America and here, this part of the world.
Thank you.
The Middle East or North Africa.
Thank you for that.
We're
just fresh out of time. Thank you very much, Hamid Chahrabi, Research Director at the House of Latin America, spoke to us from Tehran. Arnold August, a pleasure, author and journalist. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mika Vatakway and the team. It's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Islamic Revolution and Economic Achievements. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, these days mark the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. If you remember, in the previous episode, we talked about the economic achievements in Iran after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in comparison with such achievements during the Shah's regime. Today, we are going to continue the issue and present you some other aspects of Iran's economic successes during the past four decades. Stay tuned, please. Among Iran's economic activities, which are among strategic policies of the country, mention should be made of knowledge-based economy. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his speeches, has several times referred to Imam Ali's statement that knowledge is the source of dominance.
Ayatollah Khamenei has thus reminded the officials the high status of various sciences and the importance of investment in different fields of sciences. He says, "We need to make progress scientifically. This is our definite need. If we do not make progress scientifically, the threats of our civilizational enemies and our cultural and political enemies will be there forever. The threat will be stopped, or it will be less dangerous when we make progress scientifically. Today, true power belongs to those nations which enjoy modern technologies and gains access to breakthroughs in various sciences." In view of this, the leader has time and again stressed the knowledge-based economy in order to cause creativity, enhance productivity and efficiency of different economic fields. Iran enjoys a young and educated manpower that has high capacity in application of sciences in the direction of the country's economic advancement. Therefore, any investment on knowledge-based economy should be considered as one of the important achievements of the Islamic Revolution. This kind of economy is based on innovation, research, and development. For less than a decade, the Islamic Republic has managed to enhance its ranking in terms of innovation from 120 to 60. Over 7,000 knowledge-based and 1,600 innovative firms have been registered in Iran. These firms are presenting their products and services to the society and industries in technological domains such as biology, agriculture and food industries, chemistry, machinery and advanced equipment, medical equipment and apparatuses, power and electronics, IT and computer software, etc. Iran has made great breakthroughs for the past 20 years in the field of medical equipment. Thus, the Islamic Republic has become self-sufficient in many products. More than 3,500 companies and 248 knowledge-based firms are working in the field of medical equipment. Skillful specialists have successfully taken some of the medical apparatuses out of the monopoly of a few global corporations. For instance, we can mention unique achievements in the industry of medical equipment during the coronavirus pandemic, while many countries were grappling with shortage of such equipment and even consumer items such as face masks and gloves. Iranian producers ably overcame illegal sanctions and even reached the stage of export of such items. Currently, Iranian medical equipment and products are exported to more than 50 countries. Moreover, the existence of many specialists in various medical fields, coupled with highly advanced medical standards and also reasonable expenses, have persuaded hundreds of thousands of patients from different countries to travel to Iran for treatment. Dear listeners, knowledge-based companies can be seen in other economic domains too. Agriculture, for example, makes use of modern technologies to feed apartment plants and drones to survey agricultural parasites. There are 298 active knowledge-based companies in agriculture, biotechnology, and food industries in the country. These companies both secure the domestic market and export the extra products. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, data for 2020, Iran had the 3rd to 19th global ranking in the important agricultural products. as in the field of industry and mines, Iran was basically dependent before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. But today, many kinds of machinery and parts needed in the field of industry and mines are manufactured by young experts. Industrial townships have increased considerably after the revolution. Before the revolution, there were only two industrial townships with urban facilities, water, electricity, and natural gas and telephone. This has increased to nearly 600 now. As for food and drink industries, there were 719 big industries in 1977, while the number has reached to more than 2,700. In the field of textile, clothing, and leather industries, we have witnessed the doubling of production centers after the revolution. The paper and publication industries enjoyed only 166 active firms during the Shah's regime, while this has increased to 500. Furthermore, there are many factories manufacturing home appliances, cars, and affiliated products. As for mines and mineral industries, there were less than 200 active mines in Iran before the Islamic Revolution. But this has surged to 10,000 today. 60% of Iran's mineral reserves can be produced for construction materials, and others are metal and non-metal ores. To give a better picture in the field, let us focus on two strategic products, namely steel and cement. Iran produced 6.9 million tons of steel in the first quarter of 2022 to stand among 10 steel-producing countries in the world. Today, there are nearly 100 steel factories in Iran. Cement is another product whose consumption has highly increased for the past years. Iran is now capable of producing 27 types of gray, mason, and colored cements. Iran was among the 8 top producers of cement in the world in 2021. There are approximately 80 factories working in the field in the country. The product both secures the domestic market and is exported to regional and neighboring nations like Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Kuwait, Oman, Pakistan, Qatar, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. Satellites play a very important role in the growth and development of countries. Satellites used to be used mainly for security purposes, while today they are viewed as the tools to help in economic and developmental areas. The images and data transmitted by satellites have great usages, including telecommunication, navigation, natural disasters forecast, exploration of mines, weather and climate monitoring, surveillance of forests, pastures, and oceans. Iranian knowledge-based companies are active in planning and manufacturing of satellite reception and dispatching stations. The last but not the least achievement in this sphere was the launching of satellite carrier Qaem-100, which was put into the orbit by the experts of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, Aerospace Force, on November 4, 2022. This satellite carrier has plans to put Nahid-1 satellite into orbit. Nahid-1 is a telecommunications satellite made by Iran's Space Research Center.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB.